Cheers, Leute. Heute ist mal wieder gute Laune im Besenwagen. Scheiß auf, schlechtes Wetter, Überschuhe an und los. Und wenn du Kaffeepause machst und dann nicht mehr raus willst in die Kälte, dann holt der gut beheizte Besenwagen dich ab und bringt dich nach Hause. Also auf gar keinen Fall wörtlich nehmen. Zieh dir deine scheiß Kopfhörer an, stell Besenwagen-Podcast an und fahr nach Hause. Imaginär fährst du dann nämlich mit uns heute von Kasachstan nach Belgien und wieder zurück. Das könnte eine extrem spannende Folge werden, aber wir sind noch genauso ahnungslos und gespannt wie du. Erstmal danke fürs Einsteigen. Schnall dich an, mein Name ist Bastian Marx.
Meiner ist Paul Voss.
Und meiner Anni Stauff.
Nächste Runde, Trainingrunde, gesponsert von...
So, ausnahmsweise, und es ist ja schon fast was Besonderes, ist hier mal ein Bikepart-Hersteller-Partner der Folge heute, nämlich SQLab. Schon irgendwie so ein Big Player OG im Sattelbusiness für mich und Sättel habe ich auf jeden Fall schon einige gekauft im Leben und wer da jetzt in nächster Zeit was Neues braucht, der kann mit uns hier bei SQLab mal durchstöbern.
Ja, es gibt auch für mich eine Sache, die ich gerne viel, viel früher gewusst hätte und zwar die richtige Sattelbreite auszuwählen. Man hat halt früher immer nur den Sattel genommen, der gerade cool war oder den es halt vom Team gab. Aber auch da wurde eigentlich nie die Option gestellt, eine andere Breite zu wählen, sondern da gab es nur ein Modell und das musste dann gefahren werden. Als ich dann aufgehört habe und alles selbst aussuchen konnte, war das so eines der ersten Dinge, auf die ich dann aufmerksam geworden bin, mal die Sitzknochenbreite zu messen und dann eben einen passenden Sattel auszuwählen. Und was muss ich sagen, nach schon zu dem Zeitpunkt 15 Jahren Rennradfahren, hat man zum ersten Mal so richtig bequem auf dem Sattel gesessen. Also das war wirklich so augenöffnend.
Ja.
Und kann ich auf jeden Fall jedem zu raten, mal einfach das Vermessungsset zum Beispiel bei SQLab gibt es umsonst, das einfach mal nach Hause zu bestellen und dann erstmal die richtige Breite auszumessen.
Ja, wir wollen hier auf jeden Fall mal besonders Werbung machen für die R-Serie. Die steht für Race, Sättel, Lenker, alles Carbon, sehr leicht und natürlich die Sättel in vielen verschiedenen Breiten. Das ist schon echtes Top-Material und wie Andi schon sagt, geht auf jeden Fall mal, ich führe euch da mal ganz kurz durch, unter dem Reiter Ergonomie auf Sitzknochenvermessung und da ein bisschen runterscrollen und da steht Vermessungsset für zu Hause bestellen. Und das könnt ihr euch kostenfrei, wie gesagt, nach Hause liefern lassen und dort eure Sitzbreite einmal ermitteln und dann den richtigen Sattel ordern bei SQLab. Es gibt natürlich noch super viel mehr Produkte da. Schaut euch einfach mal auf der Webseite durch und mit dem Code BESENWAGEN20 gibt's dann jetzt bis Ende diesen Jahres 20% da auf euren kompletten Warenkorb.
Wir packen euch den Link zu dem Vermessungsset und natürlich noch mal ein paar mehr Infos wieder, wie immer, in die Shownotes.
Ja, Basti, jetzt, ich will jetzt nicht hören, dass dir heute kalt war.
Ja, doch war.
Also ich fand's
gestern heute, war besser.
Also ganz ehrlich, zum Hintergrund, gestern am Dienstag sind Basti und ich hatten zusammen eine schöne Ausfahrt im rheinländischen Gebirge und
eins der zwei Gebirge.
Ja, genau. Haben uns die weltberühmten Halden angeschaut, wo es regelmäßig Duelle zwischen einem eher kleineren und einem größeren Deutschen gibt. Und
Klessner Höhe, Andi, habe ich Paul gezeigt gestern.
Mhm. Und da hing das Wetter im Gebirge. Der Berg ist ja so hoch, dass die Wolken da drinnen hingen und hat es geregnet. Gestern fand ich sehr unangenehm vom Wetter her. Heute war einfach nur...
Übrigens letztens auch noch gefahren, aber nur runter.
Wie nur runter?
Ich kam von oben.
Hab Scrabble gefahren?
Naja, aber Andi, da musst du ja auch hochgefahren sein irgendwo.
Ja.
Aber warum sagst du,
da können wir auch mal langfahren. Da kannst du richtig gut trainieren.
Ja, du sagst hochgefahren.
Du bist nur runtergefahren, da musst du ja auch hochgefahren
sein. Ja, das da, wo ihr raufgefahren seid, bin ich nur runtergefahren. Okay. Okay. Wie ist denn da gerade der Zwischenstand? Hat immer noch Anton Schiffer da kommen?
Ja, aber richtig Vorsprung. Ich habe heute extra nochmal geguckt. Also schon, hat Paul schon erzählt, Nils Pollitt gegen Anton Schiffer, jetzt schon mehrmals die Führung gewechselt, Glessner Höhe, also auch Prestige-Segment. Es hat sogar so ein Strava-Certified-Segment. Anton Schiffer irgendwie 3, 3 Minuten 19 und Nils 3 Minuten 30 oder so. Anton Schiffer 550 Watt oder so.
Was wiegt der so 50 Kilo oder sowas, ne?
Ja, der wird schon auch
seine 60 haben.
Seine 62 bis 65 vielleicht haben irgendwo.
Ja. Ist schon unangenehm.
Ja, aber also gestern, ich hatte heute gar nicht so viel weniger Durchschnitt, aber irgendwie heute musste ich mich richtig quälen. Es war irgendwie unangenehm. Aber ich bin wieder vom Glauben abgefallen, als wir zu Hause waren und du hast hochgeladen, ich habe hochgeladen und du hast 211 Watt Schnitt und ich 175 Watt Schnitt. Auf die einfach selbe Radfahrt und ich bin nicht bei dir im Windschatten gefahren. Einfach fast 40 Watt Unterschied, wie kann das sein? Ich meine, ja, du hast Winterreifen, okay.
Ich habe Winterreifen und keine Aero-Laufräder drin. Also jetzt mal ohne Mist, dass mit den Reifen, das hätte ich ja nicht gedacht, aber das macht ja, das merkt man, das ist echt unangenehm. Und wenn ich neben dir fahre, habe ich auch das Gefühl, ich bin Andi. Also weißt du, also das ist so, dass ich einfach, also erstmal habe ich das Gefühl, ich sitze mega aufrecht. Plus, dass ich halt 2 Meter groß bin. Weil du, also ich muss ja wirklich runtergucken zu dir. Also du bist jetzt nicht, also es ist nicht so, dass du ein Zwerg bist, aber bist du auf dem Rad, bist du echt klein.
Ja. Ich kann ja nichts dafür, ist ganz normal für mich.
Ja, ja, aber das ist halt echt so, ich bin heute alleine gefahren, dachte, ich habe mich wieder wie ein ganz normaler Mensch gefühlt von der Größe her so.
Danke.
So zwischen 1,70 und 1,80 im Schaufenster, weil ich neben dir fahre, fühle ich mich halt wie so ein Riese, der nicht Rad fahren sollte. Aber ja.
Also es sind so 10 Zentimeter Unterschied zwischen uns beiden.
Ja, aber ich habe...
Wie viel Schnitt km/h seid ihr denn gefahren?
Ja, nicht so schnell. Nee. Und der Basti steckt auch so komisch.
Ja, ich habe aber auch immer, wenn ich mit so Leuten wie Paul fahre oder so KT fahren, denke ich so, ich bin zu langsam für die langweilen sich dann, ich muss ein bisschen fahren.
Dass du das immer noch denkst, nach so vielen Jahren in diesem Podcast.
Also ich weiß auch nicht, ja.
Das ist auch nicht deine Aufgabe, das Tempo zu machen.
Das stimmt, ja.
Ja.
Das einzige Mal, wo das dann stimmt oder wo ich immer noch hinterherfahre, ist, wenn man mit Ben Zwiehoff fährt. Da ist auf jeden Fall, da habe ich eher so 230 Watt dauerhaft am Start statt 170.
Ja, ich möchte auch mal gerne mit Ben fahren. Aber ich glaube, bei Ben muss ich mich echt drauf, also muss ich in Form sein. Sonst bräuchte ich nicht ins Sauerland fahren.
Tja, der hat jetzt auch schon wieder 2 Wochen trainiert. Da ist natürlich so die Offseason dann, ich glaube, bei dem geht es auch relativ schnell, dass es wieder läuft.
Ja. Ich glaube, jetzt muss ein bisschen warten. Der ist bestimmt jetzt auch schon fast auf dem Weg in den Süden, oder?
Ich weiß gar nicht, was der letztes oder dieses Jahr ist er ja Australien gefahren. Ich weiß nicht, was bei dem jetzt so ansteht.
Ich bin übrigens auch
nicht so auf dem Weg in den Süden. So Radprofis, die überwintern? So in Deutschland?
Klar.
Wer denn? Ach
so, in Deutschland. Ich dachte,
also Nils, glaube ich, bleibt schon relativ viel in Deutschland. Ne? Der hat das ja sich so ein bisschen von André Greipel abgeguckt. Der war ja wirklich... Mhm. Bis auf die Trainingslager, teilweise den ganzen Winter hier in der Kölner Bucht, würde ich mal sagen. In Köln hat er nicht gewohnt, aber.
Ja, also ich kann es vielleicht auch im Zusammenhang auf meine Familie hat. Also man die mag. Also ich glaube, das.
ja, gut, klar. Also zu Hause ist es schon am schönsten eigentlich, ne?
Ja, nicht für jeden.
Also, und ich habe auch manchmal das Gefühl, dass das doch. Dass so in Belgien und Holland, dass die, also sind ja meistens Frauen, ne, und Kinder, so, dass die einfach mitkommen, wenn die nach Alicante ziehen oder Calpe oder was weiß ich, irgendwo da in Südspanien, dass die einfach mitkommen. Und dann, ja, sind die halt da,
also
oder nach Andorra.
Ich kenne so.
Aber deutsche Fahrer, der einzige deutsche Fahrer, dem mir jetzt einfällt, ist eigentlich Max Schachmann, der in Andorra lebt. Und sonst der Rest, also die Familie ja haben, ne? Und sonst der Rest ist doch in Deutschland, oder nicht?
Ja, also viele wohnen in Österreich, ne?
Ja, stimmt. Ajo, also ganz ehrlich, ne? Also ich meine, um da ein paar Prozent Steuern zu sparen halt, ne? Hat sie dann halt und beim Bodensee immer rübergerollt. Aber die würden dann sonst auch in Deutschland leben.
also ich habe mal das Zitat gehört über Enric Mas, warum der nicht mehr auf Mallorca lebt, dass er meinte, so, ja, also sehe ich die ganze Zeit einen von meiner Familie. Deswegen in Andorra habe ich meine Ruhe so ungefähr.
Ja gut, das kann ich bei den Spaniern. Ich glaube, das kann schon nervig sein. So, die sind ja ein bisschen emotionaler als wir manchmal hier im Norden.
Ja, aber ja. Also, klar, siehst du dann, also wenn du auf Mallorca, glaube ich, geboren und aufgewachsen bist, klar, dann siehst du jeden Tag einen, den du kennst. Ne? So viel Platz ist da ja nicht.
Vor allem, dich kennt da auch jeder, ne? Also ich meine, im Prinzip, ich weiß nicht, wie Hannes Wilksch sich fühlt. Der ist ja jetzt auch Mallorquiner, also der ist ja jetzt auch hingezogen. Der kennt ja jetzt wahrscheinlich auch schon Gott und die Welt. Aber ja.
Nee. Also es war auf jeden Fall immer gut, mit Mallorquinern Rad zu fahren, weil da hast du in den Cafés maximal die Hälfte bezahlt.
Hm. Aber auch maximal.
Ja, wirklich. Also das war, ich weiß nicht, das war unterm Einkaufspreis, was die uns da gegeben haben.
Und wenn du Glück hast, gehört dir das Café vielleicht sogar auch. Also die Chance war ja,
dann musst du bezahlen. Dann musst du vollen Preis bezahlen. Also in der Bäckerei von Vicente Reines habe ich, glaube ich, noch nie einen Rabatt bekommen.
Ja.
Ich habe noch so ein paar Off-Topics, Topic-Findings aus der Woche. Ich gucke ja immer morgens, wer hat Geburtstag gehabt von unseren Gästen auf
Plus-Sex-Sets
in der Geburtstagsliste. Ja, ja, natürlich. Morgens, erste, was man macht, einmal aufs Klo gehen, Handy, Procycling Stats, wer hat Geburtstag? Dann, wenn ein Besenwagen-Gast unter den ersten 100 ist, dann suche ich den Post raus und reposte den, so läuft
das. Ich hätte gedacht, dass du das sogar bei dem Kleiner drin stehen hast.
Nee. Also noch es gibt nicht. Definitiv auch Gäste, die nicht in Procycling Stats stehen und die kommen halt dann meistens zu kurz, tut mir leid.
Ja.
Aber da sehe ich halt dann auch manchmal irgendwelche, ich werde erinnert an manche Radprofis oder sehe halt so deutsche Namen, die ich noch nie gesehen habe und so weiter. Und diese Woche.
Da, aber mal ganz kurz, daher kommt also unsere Gästeauswahl morgens, wenn du auf Klo sitzt.
Nee, unsere Geburtstagsposts kommen daher.
Nee, aber dann gleicht sich auch die Gästeauswahl. Aber das ist ja für dich ein Grund, auf Procycling Stats zu gehen und dadurch siehst du neue Namen.
Nee, unsere Gästeauswahl kommt eigentlich gar nicht von Procycling Stats.
Also und auch nicht von der Toilette.
Nee, die kommt eher so aus Interesse oder Netzwerk oder was auch immer oder was gerade interessant ist. Aber nochmal herzlichen Glückwunsch nachträglich. 24. November diese Woche wollte ich einmal irgendwie, kann man hier mal bekannt geben, Matthias Pfannenmüller, 105 Jahre alt geworden. 105 Jahre alt geworden und 49 bis 53, 55 so scheinbar echt stabiler Profi gewesen. Irgendwie jetzt kein Top-Profi, irgendwie zweiter GC Deutschland-Tour, Schwarzwald-Rundfahrt gewonnen, irgendein Torpedorennen in Spanien, glaube ich, gewonnen. so Rundfahrten, die es alle heute nicht mehr gibt, außer die Deutschland-Tour, die gibt's noch. Und krass einfach so, so lang her, so eine Ära, die ich wirklich gar nicht auf dem Schirm habe. Seine Teams heißen Team Express, Team Delfin, Team Adria Rennstahl, Team Ruhberg, Team Express dann wieder. Und einfach 105 Jahre alt geworden und lebt noch und hat Geburtstag auf Procycling Stats, fand ich beeindruckend.
Ja, herzlichen Glückwunsch.
Alles Gute nachträglich, ne? Muss man erstmal werden.
Ey, Andi, aber 105, ne? Was denkst du, was sagt sein Wub?
Ah, sein Wub. Das wäre spannend, ja.
Vielleicht weniger.
Meinst du, der mehr Jahre Differenz, also real ist so Wub-Alter als du?
Das ist eine gute Frage.
Gut möglich auf jeden Fall.
Ja.
Sonst Wub-Weltrekord.
Aber guck mal, aber jetzt würde ich mal kurz fragen, wenn man das bis dahin geschafft hat, dein Körper kann da gar nichts.
Dann stirbt man gar nicht mehr, meinst du?
Also, dein biologisches Alter muss ja so viel jünger sein. Ich glaube, sonst, also wie. Ja, egal. Ist ein Thema für eine andere Folge.
Können wir nur mutmaßen. Und dann einfach nur noch mal ein Tipp. Habe ich auf YouTube endlich, hatte ich schon länger vor, Marian Reusser bei Sternstunden der Philosophie geguckt. Ist auf jeden Fall sehenswert. Kann man sich definitiv mal reinziehen. Wir sind viel zu doof, um das hier zu thematisieren.
Ja, ich habe es noch nicht angeschaut, aber ich habe es auch schon ein paar Mal geschaut. Felix Lobrecht war auch schon da.
Weiß nicht, ob du ihn kennst, okay. Also,
das Comedian. Ja. Comedian.
Hat das Niveau ein bisschen runtergezogen.
Wie bitte?
Hat das Niveau ein bisschen runtergezogen da.
Und, ich kenne das Format nicht.
Kennst du nicht? Es ist eigentlich ganz nice. Es ist eine Philosophin SR, im Schweizer Fernsehen, genau. Ja. War auch schon mal bei Alles Gesagt, Zeit-Podcast, sie. Auch eine ganz spannende Folge. Immer einfach sehr spannende Gespräche mit Persönlichkeiten der Zeit und Marlon Reusser halt jetzt aus Radsportperspektive auch super interessant, so ein bisschen über ihre Struggles und aber auch ihren Erfolg und so weiter und ist ja eine super spannende Persönlichkeit. War übrigens auch schon mal im Besenwagen, falls sich das nochmal jemand anhören will.
Verlinken wir ja in den Shownotes hier.
Werden wir es nicht vergessen.
Oder? Wenn wir es nicht vergessen. Ansonsten fragt uns auf irgendeinem Weg.
Genau, Andi
verlinke ich vielleicht in den Shownotes.
Ja, ja, man kann sagen, wo Andi macht die Shownotes.
So ein bisschen Einblick in unsere Aufgabenverteilung hier. Ich mache die Geburtstagsposts, Andi macht die Shownotes.
Und ich bereite mich einfach nur nicht vor. Das ist.
Paul schreibt die Rechnung.
Ja, also, wenn ihr mal Ahnung...
Hat auch nicht viel zu tun.
Ja, gut, gehen wir weiter, oder?
Jo, klar. Israel, also, Premier Tech hieß es mal.
Genau, also ich habe vorhin schon im Off gesagt, wir haben eigentlich jede Woche, wir reden über zwei Teams. Israel, ja, oder wie auch immer es heißt, oder die Unibet Rose Rocket. Bei Rose Rockets meistens schöne Nachrichten, bei Israel weniger.
Dubiose oder welche, die noch nicht so richtig rausgegoren sind. Ja, diese zwei Teams schaffen es auf jeden Fall, die Winterpause für sich zu nutzen.
Ja, positiv oder negativ. Ja, es gibt einen neuen Sponsor, einen neuen Namen bei dem Team. Ich habe mir dazu auch Sachen angehört, ich habe es aber alles schon wieder vergessen. Irgendwas Dubioses, Basti hat es ein bisschen mehr im Kopf.
Ich denke, wir haben denselben Podcast gehört dazu.
Escape, ne?
Ich habe auch den Artikel dazu gelesen. Aber so richtig schlau sind auch unsere Kollegen bei Escape nicht geworden, meiner Meinung nach.
Die richtigen also Journalismus richtig, machen.
So richtig harte News gibt es irgendwie auch nicht. Das Team heißt jetzt NSN. Darüber, das, worüber eigentlich am meisten berichtet wurde, ist, dass das Logo von Nine Inch Nails geklaut ist. Und es
das
eigentlich
Team-Logo
zwei Firmen,
oder das?
Das NSN-Logo, ja. Also so wie das Team auch. Also es sind halt zwei Ns, das zweite ist umgedreht und dazwischen ist halt statt ein I ein S. Naja, egal.
Von wem ist geklaut?
Nein, in Schnells, so eine 90er-Jahre-Band.
Ist es noch aus deiner Phase, wo du die Goff-Sachen anhattest?
Es ist nicht aus meiner Phase, es ist wirklich eine weltbekannte Band, die ich ehrlich gesagt noch nie wirklich gehört habe. Aber
okay.
Die waren schon mal ziemlich Hype auf dem ganzen Globus.
Okay, ist bei mir nicht angekommen.
Also bei Escape Collective waren da auf jeden Fall Fans dabei. Ich hätte es jetzt nicht gesagt.
Okay.
Und es stehen aber scheinbar zwei Firmen dahinter. Einmal dieses NSN, was Never Say Never bedeuten soll. Und Stoneweg oder Stonewedge, weiß ich nicht, wie Andi hat das eben so betont, was ein Schweizer Investmentfirma, eine Schweizer Investmentfirma ist, die hauptsächlich in, glaube ich, Immobilien investiert oder so. Auch schon wieder, also es scheint nicht dubios zu sein. Dieses NSN scheint aber schon so ein bisschen dubios zu sein. Und wir sind erinnert an Filme wie Next Hash oder Manuela Fondacion, die auch mal als Sponsoren in irgendwelchen Teams präsentiert wurden und Wochen später schon vom Erdboden verschluckt waren. Wir sind gespannt. Erstmal ist mir aufgefallen, der Instagram-Auftritt wurde extrem forciert mit einem Social-Media-Manager, der eher so Instagram von vor 5 bis 10 Jahren betreibt, also mit so Frames und so Kacheln. Und
du meinst es von dem Team?
Ja.
Ja.
Also no offense, aber es hat so ein bisschen übers Knie gebrochen, den Eindruck gemacht für mich. Also es ist jetzt auf jeden Fall nicht mehr als Israel Premier Tech erkennbar, wenn man nicht runterscrollt. Und dann gab es eben diese Geschichte, dass NSN ein Medienunternehmen sein soll und ein Co-Gründer davon, Agnes Iniesta, heißt er so? Ja, ne? Ist. Ja. Und dann gibt's da so eine weirde Side-Story, dass es wohl auch einen südamerikanischen Arm von diesem Unternehmen geben soll. Und da wurden irgendwie Spiele, Fußballspiele verkauft an südamerikanische Investoren von und mit Iniesta, die dann nie stattgefunden haben und es wurden diese Investoren irgendwie um $600,000 geprellt, was dann auch vor Gericht gelandet ist und in der Liquidierung des südamerikanischen Armes dieser Firma gemündet ist. Ich hoffe, ich erzähle keinen Quatsch, aber Es ist so ein bisschen fragwürdig mal wieder, wer hier das ist und warum und was. Und ich bin gespannt, ob wir Neues erfahren oder ob das jetzt irgendwie ein großer Wurf ist. Aber auf jeden Fall wurde das Team jetzt von heute auf morgen komplett neu gebrandet. Zwei Sponsoren, man mutmaßt, das kommt aber eher so aus dem Johann Brunel-Lager, dass diese zwei Unternehmen auch, zumindest dieses größere von beiden, was Stonewake ist, aus dem Dunstkreis von Sylvan Adams auch kommen und er wahrscheinlich weiterhin der finanzielle Stabilisator des Teams erstmal bleibt. Da einfach nur ein bisschen umgeschiftet wird und das auch alles noch nicht so final jetzt ist. Sind aber Mutmaßungen. Gleichzeitig hat dann auch noch der Fahrradsponsor gewechselt. Auch noch nicht offiziell, aber Faktor ist raus und es wird berichtet, dass Scott schon drin ist.
Ja, also ja. Ich finde es immer krass, also ich meine, diese Milliardäre, ja, Sylvan Adams einer ist. Also die können sich ja schon irgendwie auch mal so recht zurechtschustern, ne? Also da brauchst du echt, glaube ich, so wie bei dir, morgens vor der Toilette. Nein, war ein Scherz, natürlich nicht auf der Toilette, aber das Adressbuch mal aufgeschnappt oder aufgeklappt und dann geguckt, wer da so als Sponsor agieren kann, wenn man irgendwie noch einen Gefallen vielleicht schuldet oder wie auch oder auch andersrum.
Ja, oder wo man auch selber investiert ist einfach. Wo man
selber investiert ist.
Ja, oder,
das ist schon krass.
Geld hat, ne? Also wenn das so eine Investmentfirma ist, vielleicht kann er, sagt er einfach, hör mal Jungs, gib mal dem Team ein bisschen Geld, sonst gehe ich mit meinem Geld woanders hin. Ne?
Genau.
Das kann er schon alleine sein. Also Basti, ich habe gerade nur mal geguckt, es hat jetzt auf jeden Fall irgendein Spiel stattgefunden, was Never Say Never veranstaltet hat. In Südamerika. Also vielleicht haben sie es doch nochmal organisiert. Ich habe auf jeden Fall noch keinen Deep Dive gemacht, was die beiden Sponsoren angeht. Wir haben da jetzt selber nächstes Jahr auch keinen Fahrer mehr. Also, aber ja, ich hab's mitbekommen. Und das mit Scott überrascht mich jetzt ein bisschen. Da hatte ich eigentlich eher so gehört, dass sie mal kurz einen Step zurück machen wollen, oder?
Mhm. Aber ich kann mir vorstellen, dass es jetzt auch nicht so viel kostet, weil Faktor wollte raus oder ist raus. Und so für einen kleinen Taler dann doch eine World Tour präsent zu sein?
Gut, kleinen Taler, es ist halt immer so.
Ja, aber guck mal, also jetzt mal ganz ehrlich.
200 Fahrer dahinstellen.
Ja, das stimmt natürlich, aber ich glaube, das ist ja weniger ein Problem manchmal auch für solche Firmen. Also gerade wie so Scott ist jetzt kein kleines
Unternehmen. Die sind so, ne?
Ja. Auch. Aber ich glaube, da, wenn man halt da jetzt nicht irgendwie KMW für Millionen noch hinlegen muss, dann fällt dann die Entscheidung vielleicht auch nochmal einfacher, noch in der Spitze zu bleiben. So.
Ja.
Ja, ist auch, glaube ich, ein bisschen Fear of Missing Out, so, ne? Also, wenn du dann als so große Firma oder so traditionsreiche Firma irgendwie Gefahr läufst, da ein bisschen in Vergessenheit zu geraten, ein, zwei Jahre, dann.
Ich würde sagen, ich glaube, für die war es schon wichtig, jetzt auch in der World Tour zu bleiben, ne? Also, das sind ja schon High-End-Performance-Räder, wenn du so willst. Ja. Und da willst du natürlich dann auch in der obersten Liga im Sport vertreten sein.
Ja. Ja, die ganze Geschichte ist schon interessant. Mal gucken, was passiert. Chris Froome hat jetzt auch mal wieder sich in der Presse gemeldet. Andi hat sich auch darüber gefreut.
Chris Froome, das ist wirklich, ein Phänomen für mich. Wie kann man weniger mit seinem Erfolg in Erinnerung bleiben als Chris Froome?
Ja.
Das ist so, als hätte sie ihn nie gegeben für mich.
How not to, ne? Kann man ja sagen.
Ja, ich glaube, der hat schon zu den Hochzeiten nicht so wirklich fasziniert, ne? Also ich weiß nicht, irgendwie fand ich, hat der immer mehr Hate bekommen als Zuspruch. So, da gab es ja auch immer starke Anschuldigungen, so, ne? Mit dem hat es irgendwie keiner abgekauft. Ich sah ja jetzt auch nicht so nach Modellathlet aus, wie der auf dem Fahrrad saß und so, ne? Also es war, aber dann, also ich habe schon fast ein paar Mal mich so dabei erwischt zu sagen, oh krass, Mann, der hat ja ein paar Mal die Tour gewonnen und nicht nur sich ein Handy auf dem Vorbau gemacht.
Ja.
So, das ist irgendwie viel präsenter, wenn ich jetzt gerade an Chris Froome denke. Also seine Werbepartnerschaften, die danach kamen irgendwie und dass er einfach auch nicht aufhören will. Naja, solange er Spaß dran hat, Ist ja alles okay. Ich könnte jetzt hier ein bisschen liegen. Ich weiß gar nicht, ob. Ich habe nämlich heute einen Fahrer gesehen von einem World Tour Team, was noch nicht announced hat, mit welchen Klamotten es nächstes Jahr rumfährt.
Geil, ja, liegt doch mal.
Liegt doch mal. Also Rafa ist ja raus, ne?
Aus der World Tour zum Beispiel.
Ja. Und die haben jetzt nächstes Jahr auch einen Schweizer Hersteller für Klamotten. Nee, den nicht.
Asos.
Ja. Kann sein. Ja, okay. War ja natürlich sehr viel Pink, habe ich nicht so gut erkannt.
Ja, Andi, also alle, die jetzt gerade YouTube schauen, haben Andis Schulterzucken gesehen, wenn wir es nicht rausgeschnitten haben und geblurrt haben. Was kann er
aber
gemacht
sonst
haben?
War, ich fand daran jetzt eigentlich interessant, dass das Team, das war die letzten Jahre, haben wir ja öfter mal so dieses Trikot-Rating und so gemacht. Und das mussten wir immer super lange aufschieben, weil das Trikot von EF nie publiziert wurde. Also so wirklich so kurz vor Schluss. Und das war, glaube ich, einmal vielleicht ein Gag. Ansonsten war es, glaube ich, immer einfach, dass die Sachen nicht da waren. So habe ich nämlich dann auch von den Fahrern mitbekommen, dass die einfach auch die Klamotten selber noch nicht haben. Und jetzt, ne, Ende November, scheinen sie da zu sein. Also die haben es gut besser organisiert vielleicht.
Aber ja, sieht gut aus. Wollen wir mal abwarten.
Ich habe es jetzt nicht so ganz genau gesehen. Ehrlich gesagt, das Trikot hing da rum.
Das ist eine sehr gute,
und die Hose war halt schwarz.
Andi. Hm? Schöner Cliffhanger.
Ja.
Ja, gut.
Bisschen geleakt, aber noch nicht so viel verraten.
Ja, ihr könnt jetzt ja mal gucken, wie viele Schweizer Filme es gibt.
Trikot-Rating 2026 wird Premium.
Aber ich finde gut, dass mir zuerst Coora einfällt, anstatt Asos.
Ja, ist krass. Also würde ich immer sofort Asos nennen, Schweizer.
Aber Coora ist so ein Hidden Champion. Ne? Ich glaube, die machen so ganz viel White-Labeling auf andere.
Ja. Ja.
Mhm. Ich glaube schon. Die sind ein bisschen wie früher, wie hießen Nalini. Die? Ja genau, Nalini, die für ganz viele die Klamotten gemacht haben, für ganz viele Marken.
Moa war das, gab es aber doch dann irgendwie
genau,
der Produzent oder umgekehrt. Ja. Ne?
Gut. Wollen wir pünktlich hier unsere Türen aufmachen, würde ich sagen.
Nächste Runde Trainingrunde, gesponsert von...
Es ist immer noch Black Week und das auch bei unserem Partner Gonzo. Schaut da mal auf der Website vorbei, es gibt auf jeden Fall richtig stabile Angebote gerade. Und mit Besenwagen gibt es dann nochmal Rabatt auf diese Black Week Rabatte drauf. Nämlich mit dem Code Black-Besenwagen. Da kriegt ihr nochmal 10% auf die eh schon guten Rabatte in der Black Week von Gonzo. Und es ist ja immer noch irgendwie jetzt kalte Jahreszeit und das relativ lange. Und da gibt es einiges, womit man sich da noch ausrüsten kann. Also ja, Jacken, lange Hosen. Ich bin auch ein Fan von den Unterhemden zum Beispiel.
Ich kann auch noch einen heißen Tipp mit dazugeben. Und zwar gibt es von Gonzo Neckwarmer. Das ist jetzt kein klassisches Halstuch, was die meisten Leute wahrscheinlich fahren oder so ein Schlauch, sondern das geht einfach noch weiter, ein bisschen runter auf die Schultern und in Brust und Rücken. Sitzt dann unter den Trägern von der Hose und bringt einfach viel mehr, da zieht es nicht so rein, sonst hat man immer irgendwo eine Stelle, wo es durchkommt. Das ist auf jeden Fall besser als alles andere.
Das ist auch Wilmas Essential. Ich glaube sogar beim Pendeln. Apropos zum Pendeln auch einige sehr gute Produkte, auch Jacken oder eben Pendelhosen und so weiter. Wer da unterwegs ist, gonzo.com und jetzt während der Black Week noch Black-Besenwagen, alles groß geschrieben und dann gibt es nochmal 10% obendrauf auf die Rabatte. Und wenn die Black Week vorbei ist, gilt wieder unser ganz normaler Code Besenwagen, ganz alles groß geschrieben.
Wie immer findet ihr alle Infos auch nochmal in den Shownotes, also checkt aus gonzo.com.
So, another time in English for the second part of Besenwagen. And I have to introduce somebody who none of us really knows. And as I already said, her introduction yesterday was she tries to be invisible. So, we are curious. Just a few facts around. Our guest today is born in Kazakhstan, but moved to Belgium already really, really soon. She will tell us in a few minutes. And I crossed her profile on social media and noticed she was the CEO of Team UAE ADQ, so the women's team of UAE. And then I scrolled a bit down and saw that she already worked for Astana and Lotto and was curious about who this is. I asked Andy, he didn't know. And then, I just made, the question to have an interview here on the podcast. And now we welcome Jana Seel. And we are all curious about a seemingly super interesting career in cycling. So, hello.
Hello, danke schön. I have a very strange parkour, how we say in Belgium. I did a very strange parkour in cycling, because I was never interested in cycling, and my plans in the beginning of my career were totally not aligned with something about sport, beside the fact that I was doing sport from my young age, because I was born in, as you can see, in USSR, and we had it. It was still in that time in USSR. I'm not 35 years old, so I'm still from that time. So my parents, my father was a military from nuclear weapon technology. So that's why I was born in Kazakhstan. I have nothing to do actually with I have no family in the country, but he was working at the station Baikonur, and it was a close military city in that time. Mm-hmm. So we were a military family, and I was born there. And then after, I had to cross the whole USSR from Russia to Ukraine, again to Russia, again to Kazakhstan, and finally I land up I think around my 12-13 in Ukraine, and I finished my secondary school very early at my 15 age. And then after, my parents sent me to Belgium to study. First to Germany, actually. First to Germany. Right. And I spent 2 years in Germany. I studied 2 years close to Munich. But I always ask myself a question, why I need to do 3 years of Abitur to be allowed to study what I want to study? It was always my question. And I said, no way. I'm going to move to another country. I'm going to learn another language. But I'm not lose 3 years of my year to do the Abitur. And then they're going to select me for a certain profile. So I moved to Belgium because I was studying German actually from my young age. I still can understand.
So you speak German or...?
I understand, and now after 27 years, I'm married to a German guy. We speak sometimes German at home, but I prefer speaking, because my German is not so perfect. But my first language was actually German. And then to switch to Belgium, I switched to Belgium and I studied pharmacy. I was even working scientific research for cancer. And then on my 25 years old, I said, I want to discover the country. I want to go to Kazakhstan to see the country, to understand where I was born. Starting from my first visit, I was in contact with the government of Kazakhstan, and I was working already for 10 years, I think, before I landed up in cycling, with the government, building hospitals, doing government project. And one day they came, actually, Jana, you're from Belgium. You are a cycling country. I said, probably, we're like a cycling country. And they said, look, we have a cycling team. And it calls Astana. I said, well, nice, but I have nothing to do with cycling. We would like that you take a look on the financial documents and the marketing documents, and maybe you can give some advices. So this was just a request to take a look on the documents. So I did my job perfectly and I delivered the report, and I said, look, in my opinion, you should have somebody, because cycling is very, very old school profile. You should have somebody who can manage the marketing on a different way, because now we see after so many years, I can tell you the evolution is incredible. I said, you are very old school what you are doing, in my opinion, but you should have somebody beside the sportive side managing all of this. And I went home to Belgium. And I think 2 weeks later, no, even 1 week later, they called me and they said, you have to come back. said, something is wrong. I mean, it's not so close. It's 6,000 kilometers to fly. No, the ticket is already in your, we send you by email. You have to come back. And then when I came back, the minister, he said, everything what you wrote here, you're going to do it. No way. No way. I have zero experience in cycling, really zero experience. I didn't know anything about cycling. He said, but no problem. We have Alexander Vinokurov. He's going to help you. Yeah. You know, on this young age, to propose to be a role of the CEO, I was immediately proposed to be a role as a CEO, and to jump in something very strange. And I was young, probably because I was a little bit too young. I accepted the role. And then my roller coaster, if I can tell it like this. Yeah, the first years of cycling, the roller coaster started for me.
But how, as cycling was new for you, so you kind of realized cycling is really old school. So the way at least how Astana was working. But cycling is also a really sport where like a lot of men working in these positions. It's changing now slowly, but like how was it for you to go into that position as a woman, and especially being like relatively young?
For a bit of context, this was 2018.
Yeah, it was 2018, starting officially appointed in 2019, appointed end of 2018. Mm-hmm. 1 year and a half later, they told me I was the first female CEO ever in cycling, but I was not busy with that. How it was? It was pretty hard. They tried to make it as difficult as possible for me. And they told me in the beginning, literally, 2 months, maybe 3 months, and you will be out. I said, well, we're going to see. I will try to do my best and we're going to see how we're going to make it. But they told me literally, this is not a sport for women. You cannot make it here. You have to find another job, or maybe you can be a press officer. But to lead the cycling team as a woman, forget about this. Nobody took me seriously. I'm going to be honest. I can say it now after so many years, 9 years, and being chief business officer of Lotto, and now I'm CEO of UAE Medic. I can speak about this, and nobody took me seriously. They were all laughing with me. It was pretty hard, yes.
So, as I understood, the state of Kazakhstan put you in this position, and it was not the wish of the team.
No, at all. Yeah. Vino was not happy with that.
Okay.
No, of course not. He said, who you are? Why are you coming here? And what are you going to do here? And I said, I'm going to do the check of your financial documents. I'm going to do the check of all the people. I'm going to do the check of all the salaries. And he said, no, it's not your business. I said, probably yes, on the documents I'm appointed as a CEO, so probably yeah, I'm going to do the check. And the journey started, and of course, all of them in the beginning, they saw me as a trigger, as a big trigger. But when I was appointed immediately, we were suffering with a big financial problems. So immediately I received the team with a big debt, because in that time, the sponsor Argon 18, decided to stop the collaboration, and we had another sponsor, but we had a big gap in the budget. So I had to explain to the whole team that I'm going to manage the financial side, and the government told me, you will not get extra foundation. You have to make it with the same amount, but you need to get out of it, and the results still should be the same. So it was a difficult puzzle, eh? To explain to the people, the salary will not grow, the expense will be controlled up to the last euro cent, and we need to find extra sponsorship, and we need to do the marketing on the different way. Mm-hmm. I had to change their mind, yes.
But so back then, like, was Vinokurov like in the position underneath you? Like, he was a team manager, or he's the team manager, huh? Is that right? Yeah. So, but who was the CEO before you then? Was there no CEO in that
regard? No, he was the general manager and I was the managing director. And it was always the question, who is the boss here? We had always, during the 3 years long, we had always the question, who is the boss here? But on the documents, on the paper, of course, I had a possibility to fire the people. But my purpose, and this is what I have learned in my previous career, I always wanted to work with the people, with the same people who were in the company, and give the chance to everyone. But my opinion was quite often different than the one from Alexander. But I think together, the last 2 years, we have been working quite good together. Even we have a different position on the facts, but we knew pretty well where I was stronger than him in financial side, in marketing side, in getting the sponsor on board. But I was, to be honest, I was very weak on the sportive side, and I was learning and learning. And 4 years of my time, I have 2 kids now, I mean, in that time as well, but they were small. So I had to stop my personal life and my private life to learn cycling. Could you imagine, after working in organ transplantation on the highest level, what is cycling? How you manage this? How you do the lead out? We want to win the Grand Tour. Which teams are on it? And do we have... I mean, all these things, it was like I was reading. 4 years of my time I lost with, I mean, nothing was in my life. It was only my family and cycling to understand how this machine is working. Actually, it's only a bike race. Finally, you come to the position, it's just a bike race. But we make it super, super complicated now with everything what we are doing, and we are on a very high level. But if you never been a cyclist, you know, I'm riding horses, I'm not riding the bike. I understand everything about small things about the horse, why this and why that. But with cycling, if you never been a professional cyclist, you don't understand why he cannot make it, why he cannot, why he stopped pedaling at the finish line, what happened with him. But I was asking questions, but it was a difficult material for me.
But like over the years, I mean, like, we coming to your later stations as well, but like, do you, now you know all these things, do you think it's important to know all these things to be a good CEO, or is it actually secondary to have so much knowledge about the sport itself? Because in the end, you have to run the business, and I mean, and you see, like, in other areas, like if you go in the different industries, CEOs changing positions and like into different industries as well, because they're just good at what they're actually doing, like setting up companies and so on.
No, 100%. Because the people in cycling, you know, they will never respect you if you don't understand what you are doing. First, you have to prove that you can do something. Then you get respect from the people. Then they accept you as a leader. And then you can move the things and proceed with the change. If you're coming there and you're going to say, you know, I know how we're going to do it, and I'm going to lead you, they're going to say, yeah, of course. But so you need to speak their language. You need also to understand the job of simple people in the cycling team, like mechanics and the Swannies, and how they look alike, and which kind of problems they can have during the day, and see when they are suffering, coming and saying, you are suffering, we're in the Grand Tour. Maybe we need to call somebody extra to come to support you because you are not making it. And they appreciate this a lot. They appreciate this more than higher salary or something. They appreciate respect, and it's still a lot of respect in cycling for what are you doing and what you can achieve and how you behave, and not about... I mean, it's not about money. You can have now a team, and somebody, one sponsor will come and tell you, I will give you so much, I mean, this amount of millions. Try to establish the team, especially in the men's cycling. try to establish the team, even if you will get, I don't know, 40 million euro. Try to get the riders on board. Try to get good Swanis and Mykonos on board. Try to find the sport directors. The sport directors will not come if they don't trust you. You will get people, yes, who wants to be a sport director, but is this the team? Is this the real team that gonna win the races? And the sponsor is saying, yeah, I want the best team in the world. You're not going to make it if you don't have respect in this small, it's a small world, yeah? Cycling, it's a very small world. But if you don't have a respect with the people will not come and will not join your team.
Did you learn to enjoy this? I think so. So otherwise you wouldn't be here anymore, I think. But yeah, at first, it doesn't sound like you enjoyed it at first.
No, at all. They pushed me out of the bus. They left me on the parkour.
Really?
They left me once and they said another car will come. And I was like, oh, really? Okay, another car will come. And then Bora was passing and I said, Bora, take me because I'm here already for 1 hour. Take me, please, with you because I'm standing. It's raining. We're in Belgium. And they said, oh, no problem. Jump in. We take you. I mean, they did everything to me, everything. But, you know, somehow I'm thankful that I went through this hell because now I know what can happen, you know. In the beginning, I was not enjoying at all. I had a result in my head that I wanted to achieve on the financial way. I had a result in my head that I wanted to achieve on the sportive way. And I have a goal in my head to learn especially how to negotiate the riders. And I can tell you my first negotiation, I was listening. Now Alex Carrera is one of the good friend of mine, but my first negotiation with him, he made me completely. He put me under the table and he negotiated. He sold me a rider that I didn't want to take. And now after so many, yeah, sorry to say, but I'm honest. I'm a very honest person. And I was actually, during my previous career, I was specialized on negotiation and I followed the best courses in the world, in UK, in US, everywhere, by the best coaches. So more or less, I know how to negotiate things. But to negotiate the riders and the riders' contracts, you need to understand what you are talking about and you need to be 100% aware about personal situation of the rider, about what happened with him or with her last year, about the potential, and you need to understand what you can make from this rider. So it takes time. If you don't understand this, and not each general manager can negotiate riders pretty well. We're still making the mistakes, because sometimes you trust your feeling and you think, probably we're going to make it. And finally, this rider is not. So in 10 or 20%, even the general manager who is perfect negotiator and understand what he wants or she wants, we still make a mistake in 10 of 20%.
Do you know that Andy is an agent as well, working for Corso?
No, personally, no. I don't know him.
No, we haven't met him, actually.
No.
But I'm also not the main negotiator in the agency. So I work for Corso. And I think we don't have had a rider during that time in the team. So no. Probably that's why we never
Maybe
met.
Now
and
you
actually,
have.
We had
Andy
always
knows
the
Alex
connection
Carrera
to,
pretty well.
To Vino. We had always the connection to Vino. So.
Yeah, so you can negotiate with him.
Yeah, but
we try.
You didn't answer the question so far. Have you learned to enjoy it or is it still a challenge?
It's still a challenge, but now I'm really enjoying this. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, the biggest present in my cycling career happened actually this year to me. And because in the beginning of the Giro, I was appointed officially then already as mm-hmm. the CEO 2 months before. And then after so many years, I said, I will take the responsibility about the sportive part of the Giro. It was a big challenge for me because I never took the full responsibility of the sportive part. And I did some changes which were already announced to the girls months upfront. So we had tears, you know, that some girls were not selected anymore for the Giro. And I was leaving from day one to day two to day three. It was super emotional to go through the Giro with Elisa because we took the jersey pretty late. But when they won and when they were on the stage, you know, it was, everybody was super happy. But I had to find my quiet moment to sit somewhere and give myself a small cry, you know, because it was the first Grand Tour winning on I'm not going to say on my own, it's with my team, eh? But to take the responsibility 100% on my shoulders. And when Elisa Longo Borghini gave me the best present, I think, in cycling in my life, she gave me a pink jersey with the words, "Thank you, Jana, for your leadership." This I will never forget in my life. This made me really enjoy the cycling. Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's a nice story.
So the first years you spent with Astana, and then you went back to Belgium and worked for a lot of cycling in 2022 and 23, and your position was their chief business officer. Can you just explain the difference between like the CEO and the chief business officer, and also like what is the business of cycling? Like, you know, because like I know like there are teams out there who actually have a business running. Like I would say like Visma Lease a Bike, it's for me kind of obvious. There are like so many departments they have and there's like merchandising and so on behind it. But like a team like Lotto, what is the business behind the team? So yeah, what is your job there?
Yeah, my job was actually to bring money on board.
Okay.
To bring as much as possible money on board. And I was in Astana, but I already signed Destiny. So I was completely involved from the beginning to sign the second name sponsor, Destiny. Then I've created the jersey. Then it was strange to pass the shops, you know, and this Lotto Destiny shirt was everywhere. And I was thinking, one night I was sitting in my house and drafting this jersey like on my own, you know, and now it's in each shop. It's very strange. But my responsibility was mainly to bring as much as possible funds on board, okay? Then to spend the funds on the correct way, then to pay all the salaries and to control all the finance. Then all the marketing and communication with the marketing team and a communication team, and to keep the sponsors on board, of course. I was involved in everything what was sportive, in all the negotiations, riders, announcement and everything. But I was not leading the sportive department. And then on a certain moment, I was proposed to become the CEO of Lotto. But my answer was no at that time, because I didn't see, to be honest, my children growing up being so busy in this career. And it was too quick after roller coaster of Astana, if I can say, you know. And I said, look, I'm going to manage this. I can establish the team for you until you will find the new CEO, sportive CEO. And Stefan Hulot actually came in December. The team was already established. All the riders were signed. Mm. And all the Swanis, all the masseurs. So he received the complete team with all the sponsors on board. I explained him everything. And then he started to become the official CEO. And then I left in 1 year.
Okay.
Just to make it complete, how did the switch come from Astana to Lotto? Did they approach you, or did you want to go back home?
No, with Astana I stopped because the cycling sponsor Premier Tech decided to stop the partnership, and they wanted to continue only with the Kazakh sponsors. And I think there are enough people in the country who can support with this. This is the first point. And the second point, when Vino was suspended, of course, mm-hmm. everybody, it was a It was a big drama when I entered the presentation of Tour de France, and one day before Vino was suspended, the whole, I mean, my phone and all the journalists, it was a nightmare. Everybody was calling me. Of course, Alexander was super, super angry and unhappy with this fact. So to stabilize the situation, and I said, look, for me, no reason to stay in this team anymore. I think you can manage me and Alexander work together. Now we have good normal relationship, professional relationship.
Would have been a question.
Yeah, but in that time, it was better for me to go than to stay. And actually, everybody said to me that you will never get a job in cycling. Everybody was thinking that Astana was just a one single shot. But I received a proposal from two or even three teams, I think, but Lotto was one of the biggest. And I accepted immediately the proposal. They approached me. And I started to work in Lotto. And then after the switch to female cycling, actually, I took a time to break. I took a break. My purpose was to take a break and to reflect after so many years. And then I was contacted by UAE Team Etiquette. Female cycling. And now after almost my third year, I don't want to go back anymore to the men's cycling because female cycling evaluated so much.
Yeah. What are the biggest differences for you regarding like business-wise between men and women cycling?
First of all, the female cycling, the women, they are listening much more to you. It's a lot of cry. It's a lot of emotions during the races. But they want to learn. They are open in their emotions. They are open in what they are thinking. In the man, it's very clear. Bam, bam, bam. We will do it like this. They know it much better than the sport director even. And they're going to make their own race. And with Tadej, when Tadej is coming, it's all very, very predictable what will happen, more or less. It's only a few times in a year when some of the riders can do some difficulties for him. But in female cycling, you still have so much potential to grow, so much potential to discover new talents. This is the first thing. The second thing is that, the general machine behind it is the same. We need to go to the races. We need to organize. Our budget is not cheaper. To run the female cycling team is more expensive than the men because the salaries are lower and the sponsorship is lower. But you still need to go to the races. You still need to pay the people. And your flights are not cheaper. Your hotel room is not cheaper. Your food is not cheaper because we are female cycling. So to keep female cycling running, it's more expensive. It's more expensive. And if you, I mean, this amounts I can disclose because you can find it. For the male, it's between 800,000 and 1 million that they're going to get as a start money in a year. Meanwhile, if we get 100, 120, we might be happy. It's a huge difference, eh?
Yeah. But do you feel the rise of like interest of sponsors for women cycling? It's like, but is it also reflecting in the money they want to bring in, or is it more like it's women cycling, so it's just a cheaper way to be into cycling?
No, they are coming not because they want to bring cheaper money. It's not that fact. But if I take a look on the numbers that are visible at the moment by return on investment, and this is not a question to a female team, this is a question to the organizers. Why Milan Sanremo of the men will start broadcasting from the minute one, and why Milan Sanremo of the woman will start broadcasting the last 1 hour and a half? This is my question to the organizers. That's why I'm sitting now in the PCC committee, and that's why I will become the vice president of Kazakh Cycling Federation and board member of Asian UCI member committee or something. I don't know the correct pronunciation, because I want to bring a change there. And we cannot change this. If we want to attract the sponsor, we need to give them return on investment. We as a team from our Instagram channel, TikTok channel, I don't know, we can do a lot of things, but the broadcasting is still the biggest part and we don't have any impact on it. So this is something that we need to discuss with the organizers.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. And the fact the return of investment, is that like a really big point for a lot of companies, or is that the most important thing for them?
Yeah.
So do you like even do you calculating how much you're being visible in TV, let's say at the Giro d'Onna, and then you go to to sponsors say, right, we had like this and this minutes, so on, or how does it work?
Well, first of all, when you negotiate the sponsor, you need to explain why your team is the best and what you're going to do for them. Mm. To come to the sponsor and say, look, this is our nice shirt. You will be on the nice shirt and we will do this for you. Doesn't work anymore. It's passé. It doesn't exist anymore. You need to come with a very well-prepared presentation where you explain why they should choose you, what will be return on investment, and think with them how you're going to increase their sales. Because why they should, if I'm the company and I would sponsor a cycling team, I want to increase my sales. So my job is to sit with them, to think together how I can increase your sales. So is it B2B? Is it B2C? Which kind of market we need to stimulate? How we're going to do it? Which way? Of course, sport is always a very nice way to stimulate your market on a very nice way, you know, not aggressive way of stimulation. But you need to sit with them together. You need to write the plan. During the Belgian Classics, we will do this. Then during the Grand Tours, we will do this. And the closure will be this. And after all of this, we will measure this. And I want to hear from you, is your return on investment? I mean, are you increasing in your sales or not? Because I will be the first one advising you to stop sponsoring if I cannot deliver. At this moment, it never happened to me. But you need to think together with your sponsor. You cannot just say, ah, we did everything. You have your photos. You have your activation. Mm-hmm. That's it. Do it on your own. The sponsors will leave.
Yeah. And another question towards that. Is that, do you just make up a number? So let's say you're speaking to sponsor X, like a main sponsor. You say, right, we are worth 20 million, let's say. So do you just come up with the number and you hope, you're waiting for the reaction, then you see which direction you go? Or because I find it sometimes, I mean, I'm a gravel athlete, so I have to negotiate also contracts, but I'm in a close relationship with my partner. So it's like on a different level, I guess, than you do with like big companies. But how does it work actually? So how do you approach like new partners then? And with which sum then?
Yeah, but if, first of all, you need to do some homework about the company and think how much they can spend. Mm-hmm. Depends on their turnover, and to understand, okay, if their turnover is so much and they're investing probably so much in marketing, what do you think will be the level that they can spend? Okay, and then you analyze. I'm giving you now my strategy, actually. But it's fine.
Was
it's
a sneaky fine. Question of Paul.
Yeah, but you can do it. You can do it. It's a complicated exercise. If you can repeat, no problem. Then probably you should calculate, okay, they sponsor already so many projects, so there is not so much left. Or they stopped with sponsoring, so now it's a good moment. And then you take a look what you have. I mean, do you have a second name sponsor? You need to come with a different proposal. You cannot come and say, ah, with 2 million, we're going to do this for you. You always need to give them the opportunity to choose. Okay, we have shoulders. The shoulders will be so much. You have the bib short. It will be so much. But your visibility. I mean, I always give a proposal. Okay, you can take these places. They are free. The visibility will give you in return on investment this. And this is my cost. This is what I want for this place. And in this package, you will get this return on investment in addition to your broadcasting visibility. The second package is the beep short. If you're on the beep short, this is your visibility. But in addition to that, we can do this, 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 and this. And all depending on your group of people that you want to reach. Is it B2B? Is it B2C? Maybe they need a VIP. Maybe they don't need a VIP at all. They only need a very good activation on social media. Maybe they want to invite their guests in VIP and they will do the handshakes. And if I can help to do a very good handshake that will bring millions for them, then they will sponsor me for the upcoming 5 years. So each sponsor needs a personal approach. It's my strategy. This is how I do it for 9 years.
And you, Paul, would ask the most questions today. He's most interested in finance here.
No, I'm not most interested. I just find the business of cycling really interesting because, like, as you can even see from the outside, like, there's a big shift in cycling and it's getting, like, through Corona, it went more and more popular and more and more people watching it. And like, also in Germany, we have, like, kind of like a bit of a rise, you know, after the whole Jan Ulrich debacle we had in the past. And so I think there's certainly a business case also with merchandise. And also we're always speaking about like that if you look at American sport, they actually make money through different sources, but cycling is still like all sponsorship related or sponsorship income. And so therefore I find it a really interesting topic. But yeah, I guess also cycling has still a long way to go until we're on like a level where we actually should be.
Yeah, I'm so already. Let's talk.
Yeah.
No. It's true.
I would like to get back to the broadcasting topic because you said that should change in the future. What do you think would be the ideal calendar or streaming of the races? Because now we often have the races on the same date or the same weekend at least. What would you suggest would be better if you would separate the calendars from men to the women, or you know, keep it like it is now, just increase the time of broadcasting? Because I'm not really sure about it. If you have it, for example, on the same day, it's also a long time broadcasting cycling, you know.
Yeah, of course. And you have the races like Omloop Nieuwsblad in Belgium, the openings weekend, you know, and we're starting at the same day. It's impossible to give the broadcasting. People will not watch at the same, but at least you can give the people the possibility, the ones who are interested to watch the women's cycling and the ones who are interested to watch the men's cycling. But female teams, one day they should get on the same level as the men in terms of the broadcasting. Of course, our program is not the same, okay? And we don't have, but like having the Giro while Tour de France of the men is running, this kills us. I mean, everybody will see the last part. And then, I mean, when the men's tour is going on, it's very difficult for us to get the visibility for Giro d'Italia. So to separate this as much as possible, at least the Grand Tours. But I'm telling you, it's not easy because I'm sitting myself in the PCC committee, okay, with UCI and with all organizers. And we are trying to manage the calendar as good as possible to have the possibility. But it's not so easy. And it's also not so easy even if you think only in terms of visibility. It will be not possible logistically to organize it for the girls, for the athletes. Because they need to come to the shape. And they need to have their logistic to come to the races. And don't forget that female teams, now my team will have for the first time in the history the maximum amount of athletes that are allowed in the World Tour. It will be 20. but not all the teams, they have 20 athletes, so it's not possible for them to attend all the races. It's still a difficult exercise that UCI and everybody who is saying, yes, we can do it better, try to do it better. It's not so easy. We're making the mistakes, of course, and it's not perfect yet, but it's not so easy to make organization for the program, for the men's, for the women, give them the same level. And there are coming new races like Paris-Roubaix, Milan-Sanremo. I mean, we're super happy that we have these races now in female. The girls, for them, it's like, wow, we can participate to Milan-Sanremo. But it should grow that we can, because the what will happen in female cycling, that we will have 5-6 strong teams and all the rest will be surviving, because cost wise it will be impossible to manage the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's already, I think the men's calendar is already a mess when you think about having World Tour races on the same dates. I mean, no other sports has that, you know, having two Formula One races in one weekend and you just have half the field of starters in every race. Doesn't make sense at all.
No, 100%. And I can tell you, I just finished my calendar for 2026. And most of the times we will have three activities at the same time. So it means we need three buses, three trucks, enough amount of cars, mechanics, swannies, not injured riders, sport directors, and being organized with everything from service course. Try to manage this from when you have three activities at the same time. Eh? Mm. I mean, crossing each other. I'm not going to say that they're starting, but they are crossing each other. It's very, very complex. And starting from the... I mean, when you... In cycling, it's always... You plan your season and you think it's already so many years. And I think the managers who are doing this for 20 years, they think, oh, we planned the season, you know. But it will be always different because you will have riders crashing, you have injuries, you have riders who are getting sick. You need to do the replacement. With staff is more or less stable because you agree with them and they will continue. But with the riders, you never know. Really, you never know. And you need to adjust yourself on the moment itself. I mean, when it's a broken collarbone, it's a broken collarbone. You need to proceed with the surgery, yeah?
Heutiger Partner im Besenwagen auch mal wieder NordVPN. Und wahrscheinlich bist du in den letzten Tagen und vielleicht schon Wochen auch nicht drumherum gekommen, zu bemerken, dass sowohl Black Friday als auch Black Week und gefühlt Black Month sind. Und wenn du jetzt hier eine Werbung im Podcast hörst, ja, dann ist es schon mal insofern sicherer, dass du nicht auf irgendeinen Klick gescampt werden kannst. Aber das kann dir halt auf Social Media relativ einfach passieren oder woanders, wo du dich im Internet rumtreibst. Und dafür bietet dir NordVPN auf jeden Fall ein bisschen mehr Sicherheit, was deine Daten betrifft.
Ja, ein VPN ist nämlich nicht nur gut, um sich in öffentlichen Netzen vor Hackern und so weiter zu schützen, sondern eben schützt man auch seine Daten, die man so im Internet bei normalem Surfverhalten hinterlässt, die dann wiederum in diese nervige Werbung übertragen werden, die man dann ja angezeigt bekommt. Und schon allein deswegen, finde ich, lohnt sich ein VPN immer. Also nicht immer nur an Geoblocker denken, sondern eben auch an den Schutz vor Schadsoftware-Hackern, aber auch Schutz vor nerviger Werbung. Deswegen check's doch mal aus. Gerade gibt's nämlich auch ein Black Friday Angebot bei NordVPN, und zwar unter nordvpn.com/besenwagen gibt es ein riesen Angebot und 4 Monate extra obendrauf. Also check's aus. Wenn ihr merkt, ein VPN ist doch nichts für euch, nach 30 Tagen gibt's auch eine Geld-Zurück-Garantie. Also kann man nichts falsch machen. Die 2-3 Euro im Monat sind gut investiert.
Absolut. nordvpn.com/besenwagen. Das Ganze nochmal in den Shownotes.
Ja,
ja, there's I already read a few articles about like injuries rising in women's cycling because of the calendar getting so tense.
Mm.
And this is something new, like for World Tour teams, you are obliged to start.
Yeah, yeah. You need. I mean, we have also a development team where we can. We have 10 riders with the development team.
Yeah.
Of course, when they are joining the races, we cannot get the points, but they can help us, and then they can grow. And the purpose of development team is not to fill the gaps.
Yeah.
The purpose of development team is that they will develop and will be my future best talents. That's why we are running development team, because it also costs money. Otherwise, you can say you stop with development team and you just buy the best riders in the world on the young age. Eh? But you want to have your own, you know, young generation, which will stay with you and which will come to your World Tour team. Eh? And we, I mean, Lotto was super super talented on it and super successful on it, because I remember in that time 18 riders from the development team moved within Arnaud Delis, Maxime Van Hills, and all of them. It was the youngest generation which grow up in one area together in cycling, you know, cycling school, and then they move to the it's actually the I have to give credits to Kurt van der Wouwer, because he's busy with the riders from a very young age there in the cycling school, and they are growing up and the parents are trusting you, so you move on, and now they are on the highest level, all of them. So the same, but with the girls, you see in the countries, in the most of the countries, the parents, they don't want their children to do cycling because it's not safe. Because it's not safe in the races. In the races, it's quite safe. But to train, to go and train and not to be touched by a car or by a truck, this is the biggest fear of the parents when they go. And I mean, in Lotto, I lost a rider, young rider, in accident during the training, and you cannot imagine. And I know a few managers who had the same problem. It's very painful. And when something like this is happening to you, you're asking yourself, what we are doing here? I mean, why we are doing this sport? It's a part of the sport, but I understand. But and this is even higher level. You need to speak with the country to make it more safe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we all experienced that during our rides, that it changed. I mean, I started riding on my home roads 25 years ago or even more, and it's not the same anymore, right? It's just more traffic.
Okay, I will ask you a question. We'll change the roles. Eh? I will ask you a question. If you have a child, and you are looking back on yourself 25 years ago, you were riding your bike probably without your parents around 7, 8, 9 years old. You were able to go on your own, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're gonna trust it now for your children, for example, to go on 8 years old on their own with their bike?
I mean, at that time I was just riding around my neighborhood, which was a quiet neighborhood, and I think that would be still possible now, because just one way roads, there's not a lot of traffic. But everything further than that, that's probably, I think, without any guidance, the kids can't go. Yeah, that's an issue for sure.
This is an issue, and this is how athletes are growing. We see it. I mean, for the athletes who started at 7, 8, 9 years old, they are on the bike like this. Eh? And you have athletes, you have some super, super talented athletes who started later, but they started in a different type of sport, of course, on a young age. Mm. Eh? But it make a difference. It make a difference. And to increase and to support cycling for the future, we need to do something with the safety. And I can tell you that UCI is thinking about this very, very hard, because we are improving in aerodynamics, you know, and we're riding faster, and we have a better position, and we have aerodynamic helmet and everything. But what do we do today about safety? Nothing. Nothing. They are racing naked. I'm sorry. I need to tell you, they are racing naked. And after two stages of Grand Tour, they lose completely the speed fairness, completely, because they want to win the Grand Tour. In the you always see the first stage of Tour de France, a lot of crashes because everybody is nervous. It's the first stage, you know. We need to be on a high speed. We need to be up front. We need to be. But after, when they are started, they lose their fairness about the speed, and we do not protect them at all. And that's why these accidents, it's happening each year with us in female peloton and in the male peloton. Unfortunately, we need to acknowledge that this is happening, and we need to do something about safety.
But do you feel that the UCI is doing the right things to protect the riders?
I can tell you that I was thinking, I also had a lot of remarks before I joined the PCC committee. And when I saw what they are doing, I was thinking, what we can do more at this moment? I mean, can we do more? Can we find a company with AI technology that they do something on their... Because the most important in to protect their belly, yeah? I mean, the helmet is protecting their head. If they will break their hand or legs, it's not so. But to protect the upper body and the belly, this is the most important thing. But at this moment, we don't have anything, and we need to work with the engineers, with the companies, and I'm pretty sure that there are a lot of companies in the world who can help us with this 100%. Eh? Mm.
I would now ask a bit about the team and the your role, the goals. The team is pretty young, actually, still. And I noticed, a big rise or a big motivation to get the team bigger, even like since you are on. I don't know, like in the last 2 years, the roster got extremely better, like now with the latest acquisition of Elisa Longoborghini, or even like within this Tour de France when scoutings like Mavis Gibbon worked out pretty well. Became a fan of her in this Tour de France. It was pretty nice to watch. What is the structured goal of the team? Maybe let's say it like this.
The perspective, it's very easy from the board of directors to Mama Abu Dhabi. I need to make it happen that the team will become the best team in the world as soon as possible.
Very nice.
Well, easy, yeah? Easy. So
very nice.
So, Jana, when do you think we will be the best team in the world? But they give us a lot of support, of course. Mm-hmm. They give us a lot of support in terms of, not only in terms of foundation, but in terms of knowledge, in terms of taking the decision, in terms of moving fast. And when I came to the team, of course, the team was founded without me. And the female cycling was still, I mean, even I came 2 years ago, and now we're on a different speed. But they were very proactive on the proposals that I made. And I said, look, I mean, now you are moving to the World Tour. Of course, when you are coming from the World Tour, from the men's, on the highest level, it was not easy, but it was possible for me to see the gaps that we are missing, you know. We are not the same. You cannot compare female peloton with male peloton, okay? The dynamics are different. But the needs, the basics, all these things, are the same. So when you are coming from the water level, you can see these things and you can, I mean, you can ask it to your board of directors and to say we need to improve this. But it all takes time. You cannot arrange a good people in one day. You cannot find, I'm going to say you from this year, we have a very good German doctor. And for me, the German medicine, because I studied medicine in Germany, it's still the best medicine in the world. Now we have a good German doctor. And now I can sleep on my 2 ears that the medicine will be okay, that everything about health of the riders will be 100% fine, that the protocols will be there. I'm not telling you that the people working with us were bad, not at all. But when the team evaluating, the people will change. It's a normal process. So it's all taking time. And our to answer your questions, because quite often I go far and I'm not answering your question. To answer your question, yes, we want to become the best team in the world. Does it will happen with us next year? I don't know. Maybe yes, maybe not. But we will definitely have, I truly believe, a better season. And if we don't have a better season, then we have 2 left hands. Because with all the preparation that we have done, or we need to be so unlucky with injuries and everything, because the preparation is done until the last Polish thing of our program. And we were thinking about each single detail. And if we cannot execute it on the best way, I mean, the only thing that we can do now is execute on our best way. But for the rest, we cannot do more than that. And I hope we will have a better Belgian Classic season. It's important for me. I live in the country. It's important for the team. I hope we will have more points. I hope we will have a super good lead out for our sprinters, because this is something new. We have the best sprinter in the world, of course, Lorena Wiebes. Chapeau to her, what she's doing, really, mentally, physically. But one day you need to find somebody who will be better than Lorena. It's a sport. It's with respect to everyone, but one day somebody will be better than Lotte Kopecky. Somebody will be better than Lisa Longo Borghini. And to detect this talent, I signed my Eva Scriben together with our sport manager, Sherry Pridham. At that time, you couldn't see that Maeva Scriben can win two stages in a row in Tour de France. Nobody expected this, you know, when we signed. But it's a kind of feeling inside that you get when you speak to the rider that probably it's the right one.
And not to forget, like, your Polish rider, Dominika Wlodarczyk, she got fourth in the GC of the Tour de France, and maybe Maeva Scriben could have been also in GC. Better from her talent. So in men's Tour de France, you always would measure the best team in the world, of course, with the Tour de France GC result, and also with, of course, UCI points. And I think these are the ones you would measure this to.
Yeah, UCI points are super important for us. UCI ranking is super important for us. But as a team, you need to decide. We have some big main goals. And to win Giro d'Italia doesn't mean to get maximum amount of points during Giro d'Italia. Because the teams who will be scoring in top 10 with most of the riders will get more points than Elisa Longo Borghini winning Giro d'Italia. You know this. And the teams who want to come back, it's what Astana did this year, what Lotto did 2 years ago. It's just scoring in top 10, top 5 to get as much as possible points. But you need to decide as a team, do we want to win Tour of Flanders? Do we want to win Giro d'Italia? And do we want to be on the podium of Tour de France? If the answer is yes, then you need to accept the situation of the points as well. And then to think, okay, and another part of the points we're going to gain there, 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 and there. And it's a mathematical calculation. Eh? it's not difficult. It's a mathematical calculation, but you need to make a decision. Are we going for points, or in these races we go for a win? And for the rider, I can tell you, rider doesn't, they don't think about the points. You cannot motivate them with the points. We will get so many points by doing this. They don't care. They have the winning mentality. They want to cross the line as the first one. That's it.
Yeah.
At the moment, just for context again, you are the third best team, I guess.
Yeah, we finished third. Yeah, true.
Yeah. So my, I guess, last question will be, where do you see women cycling, like, the short-term future, let's say, in, like, the next 5 years? I mean, we saw, like, a big rise in the last years. TV coverage, salaries went up, the budgets of the teams went up. Do you think there will be, like a plateau in the next few seasons where, like, maybe the salaries are not rising as much anymore, the budgets are not really rising, but where, like the bottom can, like, close the gap a bit? Because it still feels like on the women's world tour, like, I think the teams are kind of well off, at least the most. But then, like, underneath that, I think there's still, like, a massive gap regarding budgets and, like, what the woman actually getting in salary. And so I think there's a lot to do still, right, to make, like, an even playing field.
I really think that the female riders will have the same rights, and we are going to this direction, definitely. To the same rights and to the same minimum salary. I don't think even in 5 years we will reach the amount of salaries and the level of the salaries of the men's cycling. It's unfortunate for the girls, but we are now on the good way. But it was for 1 year, 1 year and a half, a little bit uncontrolled, because when I was speaking with the agent, it was like from this to this, from this to this. And I said, where is your line? Where is your line? And nobody knew where was the line. So I think it has to be stabilized. And I think we will select between 5 up to 10 teams who will provide a very professional support to the girls in terms of performance, in terms of training camps, in terms of mental coach, in terms of bikes, clothes, everything, you know, on the very professional level, where they can compete with each other. Because the top riders at the moment that you have, in 5 years, they will be the generation going out. And the teams who are going to be successful is the one who has a very good eye on the young talent. And this is something very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. Because at the young age, you ask them, and I had so many conversations with 17, 18 years girls, 18 years old. What do you think? Do you want to do Belgian classics, or you think you will be this type of rider? They don't know. They don't know. And the ones who will be investing as much as possible in performance and to give them this selection and to give them this direction and to guide them towards their best results will become the best team in the world. Because in 5-6 years, all the current big talents will be finishing their career. Maybe you will have one like Marvis Quibben of my age still becoming, still getting the medal in Kigali. Incredible, you know, incredible. But they are not so much like her. And to be a cyclist up to 40, for example, 43, 44 years old, I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's possible. It's all about the new generation. This what will make the change. And of course, the level of professionalism of the teams. And we have already 5 up to 6 teams who are operating on a very high level, you know, with very good people, with very good talents. But it cannot stay only within these 5 teams. It should become at least 10, 12 strong teams. And then the continental teams, they always exist. Also in men's cycling, this is not a problem. This is where you can learn. but we need to have not only 3, 4, 5 teams. We need to have more. And this is that the business need to think to support cycling in general.
You just said there was a bit, you know, a bit messy period in women's cycling with salaries going on. So that would be my last question. Did you offer 1 million for Demi Vollering or not?
No.
Two. It was two, not one.
Answer no doesn't give you the amount. Eh? Answer no. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No.
Because
we didn't.
The big news before she made the transfer.
And the one who spoke about this most took her actually on board. Eh? I respect him a lot, but the ones who was talking about this, I was not talking about this at all, took her on board. She's a great talent. I mean, she's a great cyclist. She's a fighter. But, I mean, these amounts, it's you can count the type of riders of like her and top riders, you can count with one hand.
Yeah.
This is our situation, and sometimes it's difficult when I change from men's cycling to women's cycling, when the salaries were like few millions. It was okay until you understand that okay, this is the level, this is how we need to operate, this is our budget, this is we need to stay within this budget. Yeah, you have to get used to it. It's different. Mm-hmm. But this is the reality, and the girl, it's already improved. Eh? It's already improved because if you take a look on 10 years ago, they had nothing. If 15 years ago, they had nothing. Mm. They had to work somewhere and to be a cyclist. This is not okay. This is not. It cannot be like this anymore.
Yeah. Okay, I have one more question because we just spoke about Demi Vollering. Demi Vollering is like a really good example for like. A female sports person becoming an idol for other for young girls, and like Nike took her up, and like other major companies in the world using her for advertisement. Do you also work on it to like get the next Demi Vollering as a personality? So not like on a sporting level to have like the next, like, let's say Tour de France champion, but like having someone who's actually also a personality you can sell to other companies or use as an idol or as a world model?
Yeah, but we have different values in our team. We don't want to have an athlete promoting brands. We don't need this with the sponsoring of, I mean, the support of UAE. Mm-hmm. We don't need this. We want to promote the values, the human values that the country, and why I signed the contract finally with UAE Team EDQ is because they have real big values behind it. It's about having more females in the team and accepting that it's difficult to have females on board, but still taking them on board. It's to give the support when it's difficult and not to stop giving the support, you know. It's to promote more respect to each other in the peloton, because female peloton they are even more difficult to each other, and the empathy is still something to learn in the female peloton. I can tell you 100%, because I think the males can be more empathic to each other, the men's, than the women. I mean, we are harder to each other. It's just the fact. Huh? It's just the fact. And we are searching, and I think Elisa is a great example, because you see how the team grow up. It's not only about the management, it's also about Elisa coming on board, because she's an introvert person, but she's such a great leader that gives the support. And when you have a great leader on board, all the riders are leveling up with 10, 15, 20%, and you have a great result. For us, it's much more important to, not, I don't want to use the word sell the value, but to promote the value, the human values of the country, of what we want, honesty and empathy and, you know, all these things, instead of promoting the brands. we don't need to promote. I mean, we have our brand sponsoring us. Of course, we do everything for them. We have European sponsors. We have Abu Dhabi sponsors, UAE sponsors. They are all the same for us. But the most, I mean, our biggest sponsors are from UAE. But it doesn't mean that we take it for granted. Not at all, believe me, not at all. So we need to secure our budget like each other team. Eh?
I don't have a last question. I just want to say thank you. I'm super happy because this interview turned out as I hoped it would.
I hope it was not too boring for you.
No. Quite the opposite. It was super interesting.
This is episode 364 and it's one of the most interesting ones for me. So, yeah. Thank you for your time and thank you for the insight in your work. And we will look at the team and the results and everything in a little different way now. Like,
yeah,
when
thank
we know
you so
who
much.
Is responsible.
Yeah, thank you very
thank
much.
Thank you so much for the interest. Thank you, guys. Thank you. Have a nice evening.
You too.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.